Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, next weekend, the Good Guys show will be upon us, and it's always very exciting, so we'll talk about that. A legend in drag racing has decided to retire. Next weekend is also the Vegas Formula One race. Some news about a son of a famous Formula One race car driver considering coming to IndyCar. Got a great story about Chevy pickups. Of course, we'll talk a little bit about what's going on with our gas prices. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Big news from the world of drag racing. And the headline reads, John Force formally announces NHRA retirement. Well, it's now official. John Force has run his last NHRA funny car race. John Force, 16-time world champion and the winningest driver in the history of drag racing, formally announced the news this week on Thursday ahead of the season's final race in Pomona. He did so from John Force Racing Shop in Yorba Linda, California. Now, the 76-year-old was sidelined in June of 24 when he crashed at Virginia Motorsports Park, suffering a right wrist injury, a fractured sternum, and a traumatic brain injury, better known as a TBI. The latter which resulted in spending much time in the neurointensive care and acute neurocare center. Jack Beckman has driven the car since Force vacated the vehicle. Quote, I really love the NHRA, but I am done with driving, Force said. So many times I've said, until this race car kills me, they're going to have to drag me out of the seat. But the truth is, I was dragged out of the seat in Richmond, and they thought it killed me, and I was lucky that I'm back walking. And as they say never, but I have grandkids with daughter Courtney and Graham Rahal, their daughter Ashley and Danny Hood. Now Brittany is retired because she wants to have children. It's time for me to retire. I had this medical stuff I had to address. Do I want to get back in the car and get hit in the head again? No, I don't. I'm done. I won't say I won't ever get in the car to warm it up or make a burnout, you know, but hopefully they'll cheer loud enough and I'll hear it. Force overcame childhood polio to become one of the greatest race car drivers in the history of NHRA, a career that began in the 70s, and he made his first NHRA final round appearance in 1979, but it took him until 1987 to win his first race in Montreal. Over the course of five decades, John Force has won 157 races, the last on June 2nd, 2024 in Epping. Weeks before his career-ending crash, Force also has claimed the number one qualifier position 166 times. In addition to the victories and number one qualifiers, he has 269 final round appearances and has set numerous records throughout his career, among them the most consecutive world championships. At this point in time, the most consecutive victories were five. He is the patriarch of the family team and is being inducted into the International Motorsports Hall of Fame, the Motorsports Hall of Fame of America, the International Drag Racing Hall of Fame, the California Hall of Fame, the National Motorsports Press Association Hall of Fame, and the Texas Motorsports Hall of Fame. His nickname was Brute Force, and one of NHRA's 50th greatest drivers that was announced during their 50th anniversary season. Now, John will continue to oversee his John Force Racing operation in his post-driving career. The organization will continue to field funny car teams with Beckman and Austin Prock, who's looking forward to capturing hopefully his second funny car title at Pomona. And next season, we'll have Josh Hart, who will take over Brittany's seat. So, John, thank you for all the great memories. You are one of my favorite drivers. You were one of the greatest interviews ever, and he always had something to say. So, congratulations, John Force, on a career well run. Next weekend, well, they're back. It's the Good Guys Southwest Nationals at Westworld of Scottsdale. They open up on Friday the 21st, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday the 22nd, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday the 23rd, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is one of the most fun hot rod shows that comes to town. Check out over 3,000 of the country's coolest cars, trucks, hot rods, customs, and muscle cars on display. The highly anticipated Good Guys 2025 BASF Top 12 cars We'll also grab a spot in the grandstands and experience the Good Guys Autocross Racing Series featuring the Duel in the Desert Autocross Shootout on Saturday. Check out the Square Body Syndicate and the GM get-together. Also, the Earthshaking Nitro Fest. There's more than 100 of the industry's top service providers that will be here. The Auto World Family Fun Zone featuring model cars, make and take on Saturday and Sunday. So this is such a fun time. Meguiar's always has a great presence out here as well. So if you want some more information on this, good-guys.com and check it out. And that's going to be, today since it's a Sunday show, you're going to be next week is a great time for you to get out of the house and go check out some car stuff. And that's at the Good Guys event. And that is going to be on Friday the 21st through Sunday the 23rd out at Westworld of Scottsdale. Pages of Hemmings magazine. Tommy Mantano, father of the Miata and influential designer, dies at age 77. Well, Tommy Mantano, the legendary designer and creator of the Mazda MX-5 Miata, died September 20th at age 77 after a long battle with cancer. Famously known as the father of the Miata, he was also the face and the figure key behind the 1992 and the 2000 through 2002 Mazda RX-7. He was born in Nagasaki, Japan on October 7, 1947, and his passion of cars was ignited at a young age. He was fascinated by the technological details of his uncle's Cadillac, which drove his desire to come to America. After pursuing an engineering degree in Japan, Tommy made a journey to the United States on a freighter owned by his family. He graduated from the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California, and embarked on a career that would take him from General Motors in Detroit to Austria to BMW in Germany. It was also his move to Mazda of North America Design Studio in Irvine, California in 1983, and that led to his most celebrated work, the first generation Mazda MX-5 Miata in 1989, the second generation in 1998. The Mazda Miata debuted as an instant success, became the world's best-selling two-seater convertible. His commitment to the empathetic design, where the driver and the car would become one, has made the Miata so beloved by millions of people. Oh, it was a labor of love for sure, he said about the Mazda Miata during an interview in 2015. The feeling of creating a concept that I believed in so much and then sharing that same passion with Miata owners has been an indescribable part of my life. He also overtook the design of the third generation RX-7, a car whose timeless lines are still admired today, drawing inspiration from the Ferrari 275 GTB he kept in his studio. He and his team created a car with distinct and flowing form. After retiring from Mazda in 2002, he became an executive at the Academy of Art Studios of Industrial Design in San Francisco. Over two decades, he dedicated himself to shaping the next generation of designers. His influence extended beyond the classroom. He remained deeply involved with the Miata community, earning the affectionate nickname of Miata Papa on social media. He was a frequent sight at automotive events where he would happily talk to fans and sign their cars. So thank you, Tommy, for designing one of the greatest cars ever, the Mazda Miata. Formula One. Well, next weekend, Formula One is going to be in Las Vegas. And folks, we have a title fight on our hands. Lando Norris versus Oscar Piastri versus Max Verstappen. Who is going to win the championship? Well, three more races, three more drivers in contention, and one chance of glory with the 2025 Formula One World Drivers Championship. After 21 rounds of twists and turns, the inevitable ups and downs, and a gripping 2025 title race heading to its climax, it's all up for grabs. Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri, and Max Verstappen are all in contention before a triple header of defining Grand Prix, but who will come out on top? Well, after a perfect weekend in Sao Paulo, Brazil, Norris holds a 24-point lead over his McLaren teammate Oscar Piastri as both young drivers aim for their first Formula One crown. But Red Bull's reigning four-time world champion Max Verstappen in the Red Bull is just 25 points further back, and George Russell in the Mercedes is in fourth, but far too far behind to have a mathematical shot at winning this. Well, who's in the best form? Well, while Verstappen has won three of the four prior races, Mexico City Grand Prix, well, they actually come down to Norris. Norris, after struggling with the McLaren car compared to his teammate earlier in the season, has claimed pole positions and winning back-to-back rounds with a sprint victory in Interlagos, sprinkled in with the primary win of the race itself. Now, Piastri's form, on the other hand, has been a bit on the slide. The Austrian was a heavy favorite for his maiden title advance after winning the Dutch Grand Prix, but he has squandered that lead. That has propelled Norris into, pardon the pun, the driver's seat in this title battle. So we're going to find out in Las Vegas coming up next weekend, as could Max Verstappen become spoiler in this? Because for the entire season, it looked like one of the McLaren drivers was going to win. McLaren has already wrapped up the Constructors' Championship because of the power of these two drivers. So that's not in question. But who is going to win the Drivers' Championship? So you can still head up to Vegas if you want to grab a seat for this. Tickets are pretty expensive up at Las Vegas. I actually went for the first race back in 2023. Had a very fun time, but I tell you, my personal biorhythms don't work well for a race that starts at 9 o'clock at night. So the race is going to be on Saturday night, the 22nd, and that is going to be from the downtown Las Vegas street circuit, and that is going to be on ESPN. And then after that, only two more races, Qatar on the 30th, and that is going to be on ESPN2. And then the final race of the season is going to be at the Yas Marina Circuit in Abu Dhabi, and that is going to be on December 7th. So we're going to see. We've got, and that's at 6 a.m. local time. So we've got a great championship run. This is not normally happening in Formula One, where you come down to the last race or two. Many times it's been decided earlier in the season, but this is one of the most exciting championships we've had in a long time. Certainly my hope is that Lando Norris can pull this out. I'm a big McLaren fan. I would be good with Oscar as well. But you know what? Wouldn't surprise me for someone like Max Verstappen to come up and steal another title. Well, the headline reads, Schumacher can rewrite his story with IndyCar legacy. Well, Mick Schumacher wants to rewrite his own story. It's a sadly familiar one in sports. A second-generation star enveloped in the shadow of his father's success, trying to fight and establish himself as a respectful and noteworthy driver. The son of all-time Formula One great Michael Schumacher has had his own time in Formula One, 2 years spent with the Haas F1 team, the second-worst team on the grid while he was there, and no significant results in hand. He fell out of the series where his father made the family name. Now, at age 26, Mick is young enough to take another shot at making it to the top, but F1 has moved on in 3 years since his last start. Newer challenges have arrived when he signed on as a developmental driver, Schumacher in 2020 as a Formula 2 world champion. He has been relegated to the sidelines. He's been staying busy doing F1 simulator work for Mercedes and racing sports cars with Alpine in the FIA World Endurance Championship, but it's akin to being a former starting quarterback who's stuck on the sidelines in a backup role. After contesting in 43 Formula One races in 2021 and 2022, Schumacher is missing the fulfillment of open-wheel competition, and with F1 out of the picture, he's turned his attention to the United States and the IndyCar series. With a test on October 13th at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course, Schumacher got a taste of IndyCar's heavier and unapologetic physical formula. The cars are identical in almost every way, which provides the closest thing to parity and equality for success. You don't have power steering, something and many other things that aren't found in Formula One, which made wrangling the nearly 5,000 pounds of downforce through the steering wheel a crucible of survival. Schumacher was instantly fast at IMS, unfazed by the muscular driving demands by the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan number 75 Dallara with Honda power. I think it's what you want from any race car when you go full push and go for it, Schumacher said, who was impressed by the Ray Hall Letterman vehicle. Yes, very positive. I think the preparation I've gone through has really prepared me for the ability to work with a team like this. He was joined to the team by his mother and his brother-in-law, who spent an exceptional amount of time with the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan leadership team. The presence of his mother was telling. Her son, who was considering a complete significant redirection in his life, she wanted to be there, meet, and assess the people that were presenting this opportunity. She is currently still caring for her husband, Michael, who suffered a traumatic brain injury while skiing in 2013, and that has been her primary focus, along with raising Mick and his sister Gina, and along with her son's newfound interest in IndyCar. She kept a watchful eye on him and the team. Now, if Mick does decide to relocate and relaunch himself as an IndyCar driver with Ray Hall Letterman Racing, he'll be surrounded by an organization that's been made by multi-generational talent. Three-time IndyCar champion and 1986 IndyCar 500 winner, Indy 500 winner Bobby Rahal originally formed his team in 1992 with Carl Hogan, and then the reimagined RLL in the years following with his friend and television legend David Letterman, along with Chicago businessman Mike Lanigan. Bobby Rahal's father, Mike, an amateur racer in the Midwest, inspired his son to pursue the sport. Bobby's retirement in 1998, and it wasn't long before his eldest son, Graham, was working his way up through the IndyCar ladder. The junior Rahal, better known as Graham, whose 37th birthday arrives in January, competed in his first race in IndyCar at just the age of 19, and with the past 13 seasons with Rahal Letterman Racing. Like Mick with F1, Graham has had two formative seasons in IndyCar before his career stalled. So this is going to be a pretty exciting opportunity to see if Mick Schumacher can come over and be a part of IndyCar. I can tell you there's a good chatter within our IndyCar community about the fact that this young man might come over and race in IndyCars. And I think it would be good for IndyCar, and I certainly know it would be good for his career, because right now the opportunity for him to go back to Formula One is pretty slim. So look forward to more news about, hopefully, Mick Schumacher coming to IndyCar. Well, from the pages of Hemmings Magazine and the publisher Mike McNesser, the Chevy truck syndrome. Now, a lot of people spend many years in therapy and working out their issues, and that's commendable, and I salute that. But my lifelong DIYer instincts have been botched in many ways from problem to problem, unassisted for nearly a half a century. So, you know, I can't figure out why I'm a few gallons short of a fuel tank. But save a few copays and truly with a therapeutic thing, snacks, tools, maybe some boutique urethane primers and other things around my garage spent with that same money that I would have maybe used with therapy. Now, besides the fact that the owners of Hemmings have given me this prime location and all of you nice people to listen to me sound off, I know many of you are trying to figure out exactly what's wrong with me anyway, so I'll just lie down here on the couch and begin my first DIY therapy session. Well, it all starts with my late father. Well, I hesitate to say this is all his fault, but had he not taken my mom to the Barrazel Chevrolet dealership in Catskill, New York, back in 1970 or early 1971 to do something rather productive right now rather than reading about a grown man's complaints about his childhood. Now, the young McNessers picked out two new 1971 Chevrolets that day, a green two-door Malibu for mom and a green K10 stepside for dad. Now, before test driving the K10, dad pulled the dipstick and found not a drop of oil showing. He wandered into the service department, found some oil, and topped off the 307 V8. He took the truck for a ride, realized that it was the greatest vehicle he'd ever driven, and he bought it. The end. Well, not so fast. Remember, this is a story about the McNessers. Instead, he discovered driving a four-wheel drive pickup truck with manual steering and a column shift was like trying to play frisbee with a manhole cover while juggling bowling pins. So he took the truck back and picked out another one. One with power steering, automatic transmission, 5 quarts of oil, installed from the factory. The end. Ha! As I mentioned, not the McNessers. Well, he bought that truck and the Malibu, but before some hard negotiating, Dad got the dealer to throw in all the parts he needed to install power steering himself. The ideal McNesser scenario. A brand new truck with a project all in one. Well, that pickup truck made quite an impression on me at the age of 5. Even once I got choked up to ask my mom at that young age if I was okay to drive. And she thought, well, probably a little bit too young at that age to start driving a truck with three on the tree. Now, in 1975, the 71 was traded in for a Chevrolet Fleetside, full-time all-wheel drive, 350, four-barrel engine, automatic power and power steering. Dad was plowing snow to make ends meet back in that day, so this new speedy 75 could push snowdrifts much more quickly. Naturally, I forgot about that 71 step side that I had wanted so badly to drive. I studied hard in school and never thought about the 67 through 72 Chevrolet 4x4 pickups again, and then went on to become a successful, well-adjusted titan of industry and high finance. The end. Ha! Not for the McNessers. Actually, I carried a torch for that pickup truck, and at age 8, I got a model of a 71 step side, complete with a little Yamaha dirt bike in the back. I painted everything poorly, assembled it with my subpar skills, and showed it to my dad, which he responded, "Wow, son, nice job. I'm really proud of the effort that you put into that." You know, and you know where this is going. He took one look at it and told me it's the worst mess he'd ever seen. Well, which it was. So, after buying and selling a few Chevy pickup trucks, I eventually landed the prize 1970 K10 Stepside, my favorite vintage by then. 10 years after daily driving and hauling my own Yamaha dirt bikes, Dad and I tore into restoring it and honing my skills on the job. Even painted it myself. And Dad was a little more encouraging by then, and I finally got the, "Hey, son, nice job. I'm really proud." Actually, he didn't really have to say anything. I knew how he felt because he hung a picture of my K10 on his garage wall. The end. Well, my DIY diagnosis, a classic case of Chevy truck syndrome. It's genetic, and there's no cure, but it really builds character. Some of the local car shows coming to town. Right now we have the Revved Up for Autism Car Show and Resource Fair, and that's going to be on Saturday, December 6th, and that's going to be located at the ALA Applied Technologies at 7729 East Pecos Road, and you can make an impact. It's also good to helping support dogs as well as autism. And if you'd like some more information, let me see if I can find this. It is located on, for the location. You can email and get more information at carshow@pawsfriendship.org. And once again, that's going to be located at 7729 East Pecos Road in Mesa, and that is from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. on Saturday, December 6th. Let's talk some gas prices with our friends over at AAA right now. Gas prices are fairly stable across the country. Right now, the average gas price in the country is $3.07. Here in Arizona, $3.36, which is about the same. Over in New Mexico, $2.76. Colorado, $2.79. Utah, $3.19, Nevada, $3.89, California, $4.66 a gallon, which I find interesting because Hawaii gas is $4.46. Still, that amazes me. Our friends to the east, Texas, average gas price $2.62 a gallon, $2.51 in Oklahoma. So if you happen to be heading east, well, there's some cheap gas in your future. All right, let's talk what's going on with our gas prices here in the state of Arizona. Well, our friends down in Tucson have the cheapest gas in the state right now. The Walmart on Commerce Center in Tucson, $2.53. The Costco on Tucson Marketplace at $2.55. The Fry's grocery store at $2.55. And you get those Fry's discount points. You could maybe make that even cheaper. The Quick Trip on Irvington at $2.55. Then if you're going to be cruising through Eloy, the Circle K in Eloy at $2.63. The Love's Travel Stop up in Winslow, which is one of my favorite stops as I'm heading on my trips to back to Indiana, at $2.64. And the Maverick Station in Winslow, also at $2.67. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. Well, sadly, still nothing under $3 here in the Metro, but you're getting close. $3.07 at the Quick Trip on 75th in Peoria. Sam's Clubs over in Tempe and Gilbert at $3.17. The Arco Station on Grand Avenue in Sun City, $3.15. That is cash only. And the Walmart on West Thunderbird in El Mirage coming in at $3.19 a gallon. Time of the show, time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, my 2014 Mazda CX-5 driver's seat won't go back. The motor makes an appropriate noise, but the seat just won't go backwards as it's stuck on something. The seat goes up and down and forward with no problem, but just not backwards. Someone at the Advanced Auto Parts told me that it's off the rail. Does that sound right? And if so, can a mechanic put it back on the rail? Thanks so much, and I love your column. And that's from Kara. Well, Kara, this is an optional feature for aging drivers. As people get older, they tend to shrink, so your seat automatically adjusts forward. No, this is actually a problem that other folks have had with this car. Apparently, if an object falls into the seat track, the seat motor mounting bracket can get deformed, and what happens is you try to adjust the seat, and the cable breaks. Now, I'm not sure why they call it a cable, because it's actually a steel rod. Maybe someone translated it wrong from the original Japanese, but it is a crucial piece of the seat adjustment mechanism. When the cable slash rod breaks, some people find that their seat won't move backwards or forwards, and for some, the seat moves on one rail, essentially twisting the seat and when you go to adjust it, and I'm guessing that's probably your problem. Anyway, the solution is to have the cable replaced along with the motor mounting bracket, and I noticed that Mazda has redesigned the bracket to make it less, cheap? Now, there's a service bulletin that describes how to fix this and the parts you'll need. It's a TSB09006/16, and you probably want to start with the dealer because I'm guessing they've done this repair before. I don't know what they're going to charge you to fix this, though. The service bulletin is not a recall. It's just an informational alert to the repair shops about a known issue and how to fix it. Now, I've heard several reports of people going in and being told that they need an entirely new seat, and in that case, they're asking $2,000. Well, if that's the situation, shop around to an independent shop and see if you can find someone willing to do the repair and get the parts. If not, maybe look for a mechanic who's willing to find a used seat from a junkyard. Whatever you end up doing, fix the seat. It'll be cheaper than moving the whole dashboard forward, Kara, and good luck. In fact, I was just talking to a friend the other day who was having an issue with a seat moving, and a lot of times what happens is things fall into the seat track, like a quarter, or like a cough drop, or something that falls in the track, and the seat will not move because the track is blocked. So I suggest sometimes people in that situation get down there with a little flashlight and see if something is actually lodged in the seat track. If it is, well, remove it. If it's not, well, then it's a case where you have to go to the dealership or repair facility to get a solution. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.